our food, I mean, I think I may be biased, but I don't think I am. I think it's pretty awesome. It's really delicious.
Yeah, we just ate at Al Boar's, and we could keep eating, but we might not actually get out of our chairs. So the blog, the Instagram feed is called Fig and Quince. Is that a reference to certain nostalgic moments that you've had over the years?
I did want to name it Narange and Torange, which is the name of one of my favorite fairy tales. But that translates to orange and bergamot, which I couldn't even smell the bergamot. So Fig and Quince, those are both fruits that are actually, they do have roots in Iranian culture as well. Like, people love them. Pomegranate, you know, by now is too cliche. Yeah.
So as long as we're talking about fruit, let's talk about one thing that I've noticed in Iranian cuisine, and that is the use of fruit with savory dishes, especially meats.
Yes.
What's going on there?
Part of it traces its roots to the royal cuisine. Like, I've heard that simple everyday fare in Iran didn't necessarily do that, but in the courts of imperial courts of, like, let's say Shah Abbas or the Qajar Shahs, to make it special, and then, like, they trickle down to, you know, the food of everyday people. They're definitely also associated with ceremonial food as well, like festive occasions, for our Nowruz or for weddings. There's this thing we make, which is called Javahir Pulo, which literally means jeweled rice, and we use all sorts of beautiful things in it, from berberries and slivered pistachios, slivered almonds, really thinly sliced orange peels, and it's just exquisite. It's wonderful, and it looks beautiful too.
So you say it's a celebratory thing, but we went to this very kind of everyday cafeteria, Khoni, and it was like meats with all sorts.
Yeah.
What were some of the kind of fruits that you've encountered in just everyday cooking?
Well, quince. Quince is one of them for sure, which one of my predictions is that quince is going to be the next breakout fruit, like probably surpassing pomegranate. Although turnip could make a showing there as well. I feel like turnip is very much understated, and it's big here. Oh, we do. Like, we use it for its healing properties, but we also use it in soups, and it's definitely one of those things that any mom worth their salt, like, the second that you start coughing, they whip out the turnip and they boil it for you and they serve it to you. But people do eat it actually as a nice snack. But yeah, we definitely do use a lot of fruits. We also use flowers in our cooking.
What kind of flowers?
Well, all sorts of flowers. The standard, the very much the stereotype one is the Gule Mohammadi, which is a rose, and it's beautiful pink, and you dry it, and then you grind it so that it becomes a powder, and you use that powder to garnish more than anything, like a bowl of, like, yogurt with cucumber, mastokhiyar. You definitely garnish that with the ground rose powder, and also with ground dried mint. We use cardamom a lot, like saffron. Again, when you think of Iran, I think most people would, even if they have a superficial understanding, if they think saffron, they think kebab, they think rice, which definitely all of those are applicable.
Not inaccurate.
No, they're not inaccurate, and they're definitely applicable. Mm. But for example, in my family, the spice that we rave about, and my sister talks about it with absolute nostalgia, is cardamom. We use that in our traditional ice cream, bastaniye sonati, and my sister hasn't been back yet. And she definitely, when she talks about it, she kind of, like, almost has an out-of-body experience with just, like, the memory of it.
What are some of the other bits of food nostalgia that hit you in the United States?
For me, honestly, it was some of the experiences associated with it. By the time we left, I was old enough that I had made like a when we would come and visit my grandparents in the center of Tehran, I would beg my mom to let me go to the Nunvai, the bakery, to buy bread. And then you would line up and you would buy these fresh hot bread, fresh out of the tanur. Tanur is like the oven, like,
right,
the brick oven. Yeah. It was just like such an awesome experience, and just like, and that was one of the things that just absolutely filled me with longing to be able to experience that again. I'm happy. I'm actually right now where I live. I'm like a two-minute walk from a Nune Sangeki Nunvai, and another 2-minute walk from a Nune Barbari.
So good bakeries in the neighborhood.
Yeah, although I've been told that the one that's near me, they're doing it the modern way. They don't put the stones in the sangak bread. Sangak means little stones, because literally when you get that bread out of the oven, the dough has little pieces of stone attached to it, and there's a ritual. They have like a little space in front of the bakery where it's like a mesh stand, and people put the hot long loaf of flat bread on it and wait a little till it's like a little bit coolish to the touch, and then with their hands they shake off they shake off the stones, and the stones fall underneath. Yeah, so it's definitely a ritual associated with it. And you do see people here, just like in France, you know, in Paris, where they have the image of the Frenchman with their baguette under their arms. You definitely see people, young, old, whatever, you know, they have like their right. their bread tucked under
I've seen them
their
running
arms
across the street,
their...
like holding sheets of it. You
exactly,
know?
Yeah, yeah. And some people buy like many, many, you know, they buy right. several of them at the same time, and I guess they have either big families or they freeze it if they're like me. But yeah, so that was definitely one of the things that I was
I can totally understand that, because coming down every morning down to the hotel breakfast area, you smell the bread coming out of the oven, you smell the fire, and it's just delicious.
Our bread is but this is one of the things that both fascinates me and also challenges me about Iran, because I have this, I just feel this need that I want to like share everything that I see, most of what I see, and but then there is a wealth of things to share, because even a trip to the bazaar, and it doesn't have to be the grand bazaar of Tehran, it can be a little neighborhood bazaar, you see so many things, each of them can be a book, just like the spices, the advier, or just like the handiwork, or just the bread even, because we don't have just the famous breads that are, every region has their own spin on bread, like I just returned from Bandar Abbas, which is the Persian Gulf region, and I had this awesome opportunity to stay with a real family that, you know, they live in Bandar Abbas, but they also have a holiday home nearby in a little town called Tirur. They had a music festival there. But in the morning, the lady of the house whipped out these round loaves of local bread, which were just fabulous, and designed on top with these, I didn't know what they were. They were like these darkish, kind of look like cinnamon, which then turned out that they were a mixture made from, now you won't believe this, made from ground dried fish, which sounds awful, but it's actually, it tastes good. It's not just fish. It's mixed with some other things, but they turn it into like this little darkish, very dark brown powder, which then they design the bread with it. And it was amazing. So just like, again, just talking about bread, you could write a whole book about the different types of bread.
It sounds like you've been doing a lot of traveling since you got back here. I mean, some of the discoveries, I mean, from the Persian Gulf area, it sounds really fascinating. Are you finding things that you've never encountered before that your family had never really talked about with you in terms of food?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I don't think I had actually experienced Junubi, Southern Iranian, the cuisine before, and it was amazing. They use a lot of seafood. I was absolutely surprised to hear that they use lobster and shrimp. Now, again, when you think about Iranian cuisine, you don't necessarily think lobster, and you don't think shrimp, and you don't think seafood. But
is it shellfish? It's not halal.
Well, you know, that's a good point, actually, because, well, people do eat it.
Yeah.
I think people in the Persian Gulf, they kind of take the parts that they like and they don't necessarily follow the parts. Mm. It's a huge influence, and they do use it in the cuisine. Yeah.
What has 40 years of sanctions done to the food of Iran?
I lived most of those years outside of Iran, so I really wouldn't have like a threshold of comparing. And I don't know if that has necessarily affected Iranian food, but one of my friends told me an interesting story recently. She said, listen, we Iranians, we like to have a good time. So even in times when times are lean, we still go to the candy shop, we still go to Qannadi, we still buy our shirini, and we still, when a mehmoon, when a guest comes, we still serve fruit and ajil, which is mixed trail nuts and all of these things, but we just don't buy as much of it as we used to be able to buy. But she also like meant it not just as a positive thing, but also like that it could be also a deceptive thing, that from an outsider looking in could think, well, everybody's doing well. Look at the hustle and bustle of the shops and the stores, especially for celebratory nights like Shabi Yalda, which is the winter equinox. And it's definitely associated with a lot of food, including buying a watermelon, buying like really, really good excellent argil, which is their mixed trail nuts, and its own specialty sweets. You do see shops filled with shoppers, but that's one of the stories that I can tell you, at least that if not in my experience as an anecdote, I heard that while people are still engaging those activities, because Iranians are hedonistic at heart, despite our image, we're very much poetic people and khoshgozaron, we love to have a good time. If you travel to other cities, you'll see that wherever you go, you'll see people just spreading a sofre, like a little
tablecloth
on the ground, and they make everything from tea to kebab. They practically could make like risotto there. I don't know. It's like an elaborate process. But yeah, so that's one of the stories.
So if you were going to direct Americans to a different kind of Iranian food, what would you suggest? Something new, something different? What would it be?
You mean aside from like the cholo kebab, the polo,
right,
with the kebab and everything? Well, the Rasht, which is a city in the north of Iran, was recently designated by UNESCO as one of the gastronomical centers of the world. And what they do is that they do a lot of, they do this amazing thing with using a lot of like sour and tart flavors. They use a lot of like pomegranate-based sauces, and they use a lot of like vegetables. So we definitely direct them towards the cuisine of the northern part of Iran. And just now, returning from my trip to the Persian Gulf region,
is the south of Iran now.
Yes, this is the south of Iran. I would also definitely direct them to the south of Iran, which also with its emphasis on using fish. For example, I had this dish called qeliyeh mahi, which is kind of like an herb infused stew, but instead of like lamb or meat or beef or chicken, which is primarily used in the most types of stew, they use fish. And it was absolutely delicious. Or they take shrimp and they grind it and they make these fried balls, meatballs, which were out of this world. Really, really, really delicious. And so those two different types, I think, would surprise many people if they have only encountered the predominant use of like a cholo kebab and all of those. But honestly, you can't go wrong. And some of there's a really good writer in Iran. He was a translator, and then he wrote a book which is an encyclopedia book right now about the cooking, Mustata, by Ustad Najafe Daryabandari. And I interviewed him a couple of years ago. When I asked him what is his favorite food, he said abgusht. And he answered that in many different variations when I said, what would you tell a Martian to eat if he came in? And he said abgusht. And I was surprised, because I thought with all of our like really fancy and beautiful and, you know, all of those things with saffron and berberis and pistachio, why does he say abgusht? But then I realized, because abgusht is really wonderful. Abgusht is one of those meals that anybody with any means can make, because you can take a small piece of meat and make it very tasty with using potatoes and onions and beans and just like flavoring it dizzy. And then once you grind the bits and pieces, you grind it, you mash it up and you have it with bread. So it's really a very humble food at its core. It's like a qazay mardomi, like it's like you don't serve it to like necessarily like guests, but everybody loves it. And it is actually enjoying I think a revival here in Tehran, at least, as well, where there are several restaurants that are devoted to just serving dizi, because it does have also a ritual where they serve it to you in its own pottery with its own little bowl, and then with its own little what would you say, havan? I forget now.
Mortar.
Yeah. And you know, you have that with dhul, and I'm sorry, my friend, you are in heaven. It's busy. It busies your hands. It busies your mouth. It engages all of your senses, and it's really very friendly and engaging and just delicious, delicious food.
I had dizi on my first day here, and it was exotic, but also comfort food.
Yes, exactly. It's comfort food. It's nourishing. It's and again, as my mom said, she said, you know, anybody we can even use a small piece of meat, and just like even the dombe part, which is the fatty part,
right,
and give a lot of flavor. So everybody can enjoy it. And it's really homey and it's delicious.
So I'm going to put you on the spot here. You've got a last supper to eat. What's your last meal going to be?
Oh my God, what a good question. You are putting me on the spot. It could be really simple. If you gave me... I was thinking Zarashpola, but no, probably not that. You know, I think I would love to have a really good tea infused with the cardamom and with a little bit of nabat, the rock candy, not too much of it, and excellent bread, like fresh out of the oven. And I would love to have it with good butter, good paneer, and with the cheese, and then have it with the freshly sliced cucumbers and tomatoes that we have, and just a little bit of salt. I would be very happy with that. Oh, but saying that, there's another really simple dish that I love, which is Nuno Paneiro Hendune. It's so simple, but it's really heavenly. We have it in the summer, and basically what it is, I call it a deconstructed watermelon sandwich, but you basically take the good watermelon cold, you slice it, and you have it with really good with cheese and good bread, and you put it together, and truly it's, you can't get more simple and basic than that, but it's also exquisite when you have it in the summer. It's really, really wonderful, and it looks beautiful too. It's really good. So it's surprising because instead of fancy things, I guess I'm gonna go for maybe really simple food.
Are those things that you were given in the States as a girl? Is it stuff that you remember?
I do remember it. And, watermelon, you can find it, but you can't find bread. And by now in Tehran, or in Los Angeles, part of Iran, and Toronto, they call it Tehranto. I don't know if you've heard of that either. Yeah. So in Tehranto and Tehran, there are many, many stores where you can find practically everything by now, except for bread. Like when I post photographs from bread, everybody over there is like, oh, we want those. Yeah, but because even some of the fruits that we weren't able to get in the U.S. now, I said that actually in my TEDx talk, gojasaz, which is like unripe green plums, apparently now you can order it from Amazon.com. Do you believe that? Well, this is
I guess I do.
This is the influence of food. This is the influence of food and the importance of food, and I really do think that food is a natural bridge builder. It is this conversational fire that people like to get around, and it really brings people together instead of dividing us, and it's one of those things that everybody loves to talk about, and that's why everybody also loves to photograph their food, because I think we do want to share it. It isn't just like a question of survival. It's some way that we demonstrate our humanity, our taste, who we are. And I think for the immigrant, it's one way of like having a cultural anchor, but it's also one way for the immigrant to also say, this is who I am, and recognize me. And that was definitely one of the reasons that I did start my blog, because I did want to say, I do want to keep those ties intact. And I also did want to say, this is who we are, because I think you can show who you are through your food.
Azita Hushyar of Fig and Quince, thank you so much for this terrific stroll through Iran's cuisine. I really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. It's a blast to sit here in my favorite cafe in the heart of Tehran, nestled between the Carpet Museum and the Museum of Contemporary Art, and talk about the food and culture of Iran. And I hope all of your listeners will get a chance to taste good, authentic Iranian food. The best way to do it is make friends with Iranians.